numbered, follow in that way and be able to engage. Otherwise, we may have time problems. I take it that we agree. If we so agree, the candidate before us, that's Dr. Kiabetswe Mudumwe. So there is that presentation in your hard copies. Dr. Kiabetswe, you are... yes. That's the one written CASA Council interviews, 27 February 2020, Dr. Kiabetswe. It should be there. Should be there. Yeah, but you should be having it in the document. Do you have it or not? Yeah, we have it. Okay. He's been paralyzed by his candidate.
I'm sorry, we don't have the documents. Thank you for joining us today.
Okay. So we should then proceed. And as we proceed, as I said, Dr. Kiabetswe, let me also welcome you formally to this interview. As you'll be aware, this is a subcommittee of the Portfolio Committee on Communications. We've been appointed in terms of the National Assembly rules, which allow that portfolio committees can set up subcommittees for specific matters. So for this purpose, it is in relation to the appointment process for ICASA councillors. Without a waste of time, I'll just outline how we are going to proceed. The first point would be to briefly introduce members so that you know the members of the committee formally. Thereafter, I would then allow you to briefly introduce yourself, understanding that we already have your CV, and therefore that introduction will then be used to also introduce the topic that you would have picked up, and that will be done in 10 minutes maximum. 10 minutes maximum. Thereafter, I would allow members of the panel 5 minutes maximum each. In that 5 minutes, it's the questions or any matter that they want clarified, and your responses within that 5 minutes. And that will then take us to close after the last member would have asked the question. On my right, it's Honorable Kubeka. Next to Honorable Kubeka, it's Honorable Mulala. Then Honorable Faku. We then have Honorable Van Dam, Honorable Dr. Ndlozi, Honorable Manil Charing. We also had Honorable Majozi, who had to leave because of bereavement. However, the committee agreed to proceed with the interview. So in that score, that's briefly the introduction. I will now allow you a brief intro and then introduce the topic in the 10 minutes that's allocated to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to the Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Communications. I am Dr. Kiabetswe Mudimweng. I am a member of council at ICASA. I've been with ICASA since 2016. It's exactly 4 years now. And in these 4 years, the last year to date, I am the acting chairperson of ICASA. Just by a brief way of background, my background is in communications, public relations. I worked in the private sector Business Unity South Africa, the Sunday Times at some stage as a political and labor business journalist. I joined Anglo-American within the sustainable department and doing communications. I then moved on to Samsung Electronics, where I was responsible for corporate citizenship and public affairs in Africa. And that then led me to ICASA. My academic background is public relations undergraduate. I then proceeded to do project management, and then I did a master's in business administration, followed by a doctor of philosophy degree in managerial sciences, majoring in business admin. Over and above that, I've done a number of programs in corporate governance. Those, you know, are listed in the CV. I'm a Harvard University Senior Executive Fellow in the U.S. I've done an executive development program with the University of Pennsylvania, the Wharton School of Business in the U.S., and Stellenbosch, and so forth. My career has also been in boards. I was first appointed into a board by a minister at the age of 23. I grew up in boards quite humbly. I have been in boards ever since. I have then served on executive capacity at ICASA, and there has also been a presidential appointment to that effect at Brent South Africa to just try and assist on the governance collapses that side. I hope I was brief enough, Chair, just by way of introduction. That's basically who I am. I chose option one in the presentations, the one that talks to institutional approaches, you know, the ITU, its relevance. I will try to be brief, and I think I should, Honorable Van Damme, you said you want some voice. Unfortunately, I can't dance wearing a suit, but I'll try to be as pragmatic as possible, Chair. I will not come here and talk about ICASA as if I'm outside. I think I'll be doing a disservice to the value of the deliberations we are having. I'll try and be practical. I will touch on the issues that we are currently seized with as well, and what I think we've been able to achieve on, myself, of course, as a leader, and what I still think can be done going forward. Now I'm on page two of the slide. So I think the ITU, which is founded on the back of the existence of the United Nations to look into issues of telecommunications around the world, really guides the work we do as regulators. And public interest is at the heart of it. Public interest is at the heart of it, and therein also lies the bedrock on which ICASA's mandate, founding mandate, was derived. Now, according to the ITU, you know, the need for regulation truly varies, but first and foremost, it's meant to look into issues of decision-making, processes, accountability, consumer protection, dispute resolution, and enforcement powers. Because it's one thing to establish regulations emanating from legislation, put them in place and not enforce. That then makes a toothless regulator to a large extent. On the next slide. Now, there are issues to consider in the context of, you know, sector regulator and competition law. Now, it's important to appreciate that in South Africa, we do have, you know, ICASA, which is more of a sector regulator, regulating three sectors, so it's not a narrow sector regulator. But then we have the Competition Commission separately. And the institutional arrangement is acknowledged in the philosophy of the ITU that there would be, you know, ex ante and ex post. So ICASA is more of an ex ante, meaning we regulate before the fact. So it's more of proactive regulation. Whereas the Competition Commission, regulates ex poste, post the fact. And this will be seen, or is seen largely playing itself out, even in the issues of the data market inquiries, which I will touch on as I go further with my presentation. Now, the other important step that the ITU cautions an organization such as ours is the issue around market definition. It's quite important to understand that our processes are guided by our interventions, rather, are guided by process. It's important to identify and define markets before you can make any regulatory intervention. Then there's the issue of course, structural independence. We are fortunate within the Republic that pursuant to Section 192 of the Constitution, ICASA was formed, and in the formation of ICASA, because of its broadcasting regulatory obligations, we were then put or placed as a Chapter 9 institution. Next slide. I would like to also touch briefly on the National Development Plan, and I will just zoom in squarely to the question of Chapter 4 of the NDP that deals with issues around spectrum. The chapter deals or is titled Economic Infrastructure, and spectrum is then identified amongst water and so forth as one of the critical economic infrastructures. As you know, the process is underway to license high demand spectrum. It's a process which I have been extensively involved in since I joined the regulator. We attempted the process in 2016. The process did not go further because of litigation from government. We have since found each other, and I believe that we are now airborne in this process of licensing high-demand spectrum. And I think the essence of how the NDP views the question of spectrum, one, it acknowledges that it's a scarce resource. It needs to be used efficiently and advance sectoral and broader economic transformation. I think we can move into the next slide, which is slide number 5. It talks about the National Integrated Information Technology Report. Basically, this one talks to what is loosely known as the ICT White Paper. It was published in 2016. There's a number of issues that are contained in that white paper. When it was launched, Honorable Chair, it was like a cat has just been set amongst the pigeons. There was a hive of debate and activity in the sector broadly, and it placed the authority in a very sensitive position because we needed to analyze it thoroughly and apply ourselves. Subsequent to that, there has been a policy directive which takes into account a number of factors contained in that white paper. And from the policy directive as dictated to by the Electronic Communications Act, ICASA then considers the policy directive in moving forward. But I think just high level, there's the philosophy of promoting effective competition, promoting the digital agenda, as well as improving stakeholder and consumer experience. And then there are various aspects of how that can be achieved. But underpinning everything that I'm saying is the question of public interest, as I've mentioned. The next slide, slide number 6, there are key regulatory imperatives to ICASA. And then I've touched extensively on the issue of public interest, which I believe is the cornerstone of why we exist in the first place. Now, Chairperson, if you'd allow me, there are issues that are topical that we are seized with, and that's why I said I will not come and talk like, a stranger somehow, because I would be disingenuous. There's an issue of lowering the cost to communicate. We call it lowering the cost to communicate. The industry will say, but lowering sounds as if you've already taken a position. And I think to an extent they would be right, but from a public interest perspective, we do acknowledge that the current costs of communication, both voice and data, require intervention. Over the years, the cost of voice has been declining because of various measures which ICASA introduced, you know, at light paths and so forth. But the issue around what is loosely in the streets known as data must fall confronted us during my term when I was at ICASA, and we introduced a number of interventions. The data market inquiry is ongoing, which we are tackling side by side with the Competition Commission. The aim with that is just to deal with the actual cost, because the other intervention we brought about, which I will talk to now, the amendment of the End User Subscriber Charter, which we achieved in 2018-2019, was aimed largely at specific interventions like data expiry, issues like data rollover, making sure that you can opt in and out, you know, for usage depletion and notifications and so forth. Then there's an issue, of course, of the call termination regulations, which we review every 3 years. The last time we did them, we handled this particular issue, I was at ICASA. The call termination regulations are aimed at ensuring that new entrants, which I don't know, in the likes, just as an example, Cell C, because it's more like a late entrant. Vodacom and MTN were licensed in 94, and then Cell C was licensed in 2001. So you would see that it's more like a new entrant. I don't know for how long, but it is. And we need to try and level the playing fields, because promotion of competition is one of the issues, as well as telecom mobile. Now, at the point of interconnection, when a call is made, that's what these regulations deal with. There's a particular, you know, cost sharing that has to be taken into effect, and ultimately the benefit is passed down to consumers. So these are all the issues on the cost to communicate that we have been directly faced with. The next slide, you know, I would like to talk a bit about eradicating barriers to entry and enabling new entrants. So this is part of, you know, what is contained in the ICT policy white paper, and of course there's a number of barriers that can exist when you are a new mobile operator. In particular, there's issues around legal barriers, which means you first have to cross the hurdle of compliance. You know, economies of scale and scope. You wake up today, you want to play in the sector. You compete with with MTN or Vodacom. They've been in the space for long. They have base stations all over and so forth. These are issues you need to consider. There's the issue of, you know, high fixed or sunk cost. It's a risk. You have to start, you know, with a huge or deep pockets, if I can put it loosely. And then the issue of essential facilities, as I've referred to, base stations and so forth. Now we are trying to address this partly through the Wireless Open Access Network, which is known as the WAN, in the process that we will be undergoing in licensing of high-demand spectrum. So it's a process that I have been involved in, at least since the time I've been at ICASA. Now there will be obligations. Of course, the question of transformation is very central to all we do. You know, there will be obligations placed on that licensing process to ensure that whoever is awarded spectrum adheres to those transformation aspects. Now, broadly speaking, you know, this will be empowerment provisions for industry, social obligations, coverage obligations, and uplink and throughput, like the speed, the minimum speed required to make sure that we advance as a country. I would like to touch on the next slide, which deals with social cohesion. And this is where I will locate the broadcasting discourse, because you don't only regulate telcos. Social cohesion, we can't talk broadcasting without talking about the public broadcaster. It's common cause that the public broadcaster has been experiencing challenges, a plethora of challenges. ICASA has intervened in the time that I've been there on issues within our space, because the commercial aspect of the SABC's operations, we are, you know, somewhat constrained to enter into the terrain, but in as far as the regulated aspects of our licensee relation are concerned, we do intervene. There's a public outcry around mass carry. Now, in the time that I've been at ICASA, you know, we've embarked on a process which is currently underway for the review of the regulations. Now, you see, the challenge with the current regulatory regime is that legislation says the commercial subscription has an obligation to carry the public broadcaster. Now, people would argue that, yeah, but it's the SABC content, rightfully so, which ought, you know, in the long run to be remunerated for, or at least awarded, because they incur costs in the production of that content. So in a nutshell, you know, one is very clear and aware and alive to the fact that the issue of mass carry is something that is currently underway, we are working on it, and ultimately we need to find a way of enabling SABC to derive financial return for their content. I think it's something that is common cause, and the public is very much part of this process. I mean, if you ask for specifics, 2019-2020, where we are running a regulatory impact assessment questionnaire to first, you know, problematize and properly contextualize the intervention that we are trying to do with the help of the public, of course. And then, of course, in the near future, we'll be finalizing the review. The issue, people always complain, Honorable Chair, that there's a licensee in Johannesburg in the form of MultiChoice, that people would say, yeah, it's dominant, it's a monopoly, and so forth. In a nutshell, they are not a monopoly. They just have significant market dominance. And when I say they are not a monopoly, it's because the authority has licensed competitors to MultiChoice. So because they are competitors to them, by default, they cannot be a monopoly. The only issue we are dealing with is, why is it that all other licensees in the form of Top TV and so forth that we give licenses to, they take off if they manage to, some don't even. I mean, working on water television, I guess none of you honorable members would know what I'm talking about, working on water, but it's a licensee licensed to compete with MultiChoice. The issue here is significant market dominance, which we are trying to look into through the inquiry into subscription television broadcasting service. I'm glad to say, the process is 80% complete, and we are just doing the last round of public hearings. There's the local content regulations. It was known as the 90% issue. It was announced in a manner that we think could have been handled better, the 90% for artists and so forth based on the airplay. This is a regulated space. Local content regulations are in place. We look at them every 5 years. But as we speak right now, we will be starting also another process to look into increasing them, but the percentages are there. The postal sector, in a quick one, the postal sector, we then talk about the post office. I will just briefly say, at the bone of contention here is that the post office always says, you are not helping us, Chairperson or ICASA, you are not helping, PostNet has encroached into our space. I'll just summarize by saying two things. One is that through the Complaints and Compliance Committee of ICASA, which I have been part of during my period at ICASA, the PostNet has been found somewhat guilty of encroachment. They are taking the matter on legal review. It's a constitutional question because PostNet feels that the issue around reserved and unreserved postal market is unconstitutional. Now, they will test it and ventilate it in court. The second part of it is that, one, I personally feel that the post office, based on its existing infrastructure, is not adequately utilized. There's more that the post office can offer, but it's still somewhat constrained. And the last point on the post office, I would like to submit that it requires a policy overhaul. I don't think ICASA, having spent 4 years there, is the only, you know, missing silver bullet to the problems of the post office. At the heart of the problems at the South African Post Office is the policy overhaul that I think is missing. I think tough political decisions ought to be taken on the future configuration of the post office. Then lastly, the last slide is on corporate governance. Of course, we are guided by the PFMA, which we adhere to at all times, and then the skill codes of corporate governance, which are just a guide. Having spent 4 years at ICAS, I think we often, as a board, focus too much on the regulatory aspects, and if we are not careful, or if council is not properly capacitated to handle corporate governance issues, ICASA will fail. I think here is just a question, it's a humble submission, a humble plea. If issues around corporate governance and how council is capacitated are not looked at it, and we only focus on the regulatory aspects, there might be very serious challenges into the future. The funding model, as I put in short, of ICASA need to be looked at, Chairperson. We collect annually about 1.5 billion in license fees, and we don't even keep a cent of that. I think it's something that going forward, through the interventions, one would push, yes. No, I think basically that's my submission. Thanks.
No, thanks. We'll now allow members, I know because they're from inside, the tendency may be to report to the portfolio committee. I think you've tried to take us through the presentation so that we have to manage the time at the same time. But members got the presentation, so that should be fine. Members, now we'll then have to take questions or comments from honourable members. Let me start with Honourable Faku.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Doc, for your presentation. I'm happy, Chair, there's a doc this side. Hopefully myself and Fandam, when we finish our term, will be doctors. I think you have summarized everything. I don't want to go into detail when it comes to your presentation. But given a chance for you to come back, what would you do differently?
Okay, thank you, Honorable, for the question. I think with the benefit of hindsight, having been there for 3 years as a councillor and 1 year as a chairperson, I think one would have to pay critical attention, like I said, to issues of corporate governance, but secondly, to the proper coordination and management of stakeholder relations. Something that often derails ICASA as a regulator is, this persistent, perpetual, perceived to some extent real impasse between the regulator and government. And it's not unique to our space. The energy regulator has more or less similar problems. Other Chapter 9 bodies have. But I think, given a chance, that I believe that the public interest mandate would be better achieved and fulfilled if that stakeholder relation could be properly managed without compromising or diluting the independence enshrined in the Constitution. I think that's something I would do. And of course, more pressing is the issue of spectrum. This will be the first time ever in the history of South Africa that spectrum is auctioned. Spectrum has never been auctioned. The first two licensees that I've mentioned in 1994 were given spectrum under a different legislative regime, and they were just given obligations and so forth. So I would like to really push the issue of I think it's a legacy issue, because with spectrum licensing, data costs, all these other things are most likely bound to be favorable. Thank you.
I'm happy I can see it acting, Chair, that you are confident that the spectrum will be auctioned on the proposed date. I'm happy I can see that you are confident about that. I have a feeling, you know, we've been interviewing most people, and there's this issue of the stakeholder, which I believe is the government. Do you feel, as the acting chair, is there any interference? Do you ever feel that some of the decisions that you are taking is undermined by government? Of course, in the ICT white policy paper, if there is an issue that is saying that it is reaffirmed that policy must be done by the department and you guys must continue with the licensing. And again, you are raising the point of licensing in terms of funding. You are saying that you must keep that money so that you self-sustain yourself. What options are you coming up with for yourself not to only depend on government? Because sometimes you take each other to court when ministers don't want to release the money. We don't want that in the future. But you have better experience. What would you do differently, and what are your recommendations? Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Faku. Interference. Honorable Faku, you know, the space is very volatile. The space is very contested. And those contestations are brought about by a number of issues, including commercial pressures and economic growth considerations. I'm mentioning this because when you are sitting on the other side, say ICASA, and you make decisions, sometimes those decisions, of course, so legality is a non-negotiable, public interest is a non-negotiable, but in the application of oneself as a leader and in making those decisions, there is often a certain degree of, you know, pragmatism that is required for one to apply him or herself. And therein lies, so the room for discretion, if I can use that word, therein lies the perpetual issue. It's a, you know, since ICASA was formed through the merging of SATRA and IBA in the relationship between ICASA and government has always been somewhat contested. But going forward, with the benefit of hindsight, as I said, I can't speak as a... That is why I've mentioned the part that stakeholder relations, I think, needs to be handled properly. Needs to be handled properly, and it starts from a level of, you know, human relations, to more formalized processes, as long as independence and legality are maintained. We would like to keep a portion of what we collect in life. If we can keep all, the better, but a portion. The reason I'm saying this, also with the benefit of hindsight, ICASA, you know, stands to be indirectly managed by industry through litigation. So one, ICASA does not have enough. Our budgets keep on shrinking every year. We are kept in court by licensees. Telcos, we have a case. Postal, we have cases. Broadcasters, we have cases. All across the board. Now, they can just keep us in court because they have big pockets and indirectly manage the authority. And that's the reason why I say, going forward, one's role is, of course, to engage. It's part of stakeholder management I'm talking about, because it's a lobbying issue. The issue that we must keep a portion of our funds is a lobbying issue which becomes one's responsibility. And through engagement with the presidency, national treasury, the portfolio committee, you know, and so forth. So it's at the heart, and it's one of those wins that one hopes to really fold its leaves and deliver as a legacy project in future. I hope I have answered Honorable Faku. Okay.
Just last one, Jeff. When it comes to litigations, there's a view that it casts that there are steps that you are not following. Hence, you have so much litigation. But also, there's a view that you don't have capacity, and I think you have touched on that. Is it because of budget constraints? What is the problem? What can you correct moving forward? Just last one. What is your view when it comes to the issue of merger? I think Minister has pronounced this. What is your view on that? Okay.
Thank you. So to answer Honorable Faku on what would I do in the litigation issue going forward, this one at least I know I have done. I've introduced in the past year that I've been acting chair, I've introduced an approach of engage before litigate. So even in instances, I have examples, in instances where we are in court today with certain licenses, I have formally, not in the dark of the night, but formally I have asked for meetings just between myself, maybe with the CEO, and our counterparts on the other side, to try and ensure and ascertain whether we are in disagreement. Because what I have learned is that our litigation bill was growing in the past simply because we go to court and want the court to determine whether we disagree or not. And I've introduced an approach which seems to be working in some respects, to sit around the table with legal teams and say, just before we go to court, it's your constitutional right to litigate and it's ours to defend. Let us establish whether we are really at loggerheads. Because some of the issues can actually be resolved. But now I would like to flip the coin and say, some of the decisions we make, for as long as a regulation has been halted through a court interdict, it means it cannot be enforced. And if licensees don't like the regulations we introduce, sometimes they can be self-serving and just keep the litigations in court. It will move from the High Court to the Supreme Court of Appeal to the Con Court, 3 years, 4 years. For every day that passes, water flows under the bridge and they continue to make profits. It's a reality at play. But I think my approach, which I've already established and I would like to carry forward, is engage before you litigate. Yeah. Then the issue of the merger. I think the issue of the merger needs to be looked at carefully. Step number one, before you consider merging or demerging, I think we need to just establish what mischief are we trying to cure.
Just before you conclude, I think maybe duplications of roles, maybe that is why. That is my own understanding. You can correct me.
Thank you, Honorable Faku. So where roles are duplicated, there won't be an issue really with undergoing the process of a merger. However, what I'm trying to caution against is a situation where, like I said already, there are aspects handled by the Competition Commission. The Filament Publication Board is dealing with a very specific mandate. You start all these other bodies. So remember, technologies are converging at all times, and that's what created the existence of ICASA. Because IBA, the broadcasting regulation in the past, was separate. SATRA, the telecoms, was separate. Now, through convergence of technologies, globally, by the way, it forced, the creation of ICASA. So hence I'm saying, I'm not necessarily intellectually or otherwise allergic to the idea of a merger, but I think we would need to really be thorough as we apply ourselves on that to say what mischief are we handling with, because convergence is exactly where the world is right now. Thank you.
Honorable Fundam.
Thanks, Chair. Have you sought a legal opinion on the proposed merger with FPB and ZA Domain? Legal opinion. Zetna.
Oh, yes.
I can never remember the ZA Domain.
Not Zetna, yes.
That's one.
Thank you, Honorable Fandam. We haven't simply because we've been in the past few months since the announcement was somewhat made in December, we've just been allowing space for consultation because to this point the only notice we have to that regard, you know, was in the public announcement. So I think once engagements are more formalized with the minister, the department and so forth, we would then start applying ourselves to that. But we of course will have to be very, very thorough because for reasons that I've explained. Thank you, Honorable.
What was your biggest challenge in your tenure as chairperson, and how did you deal with it?
Thank you. You know, the biggest challenge from a governance point of view, I'll separate regulatory and governance, from a governance point of view, with ever-growing, you know, Honorable Fandam, there's a meme that always goes around on WhatsApp. It shows someone saying, you salary, you know, everything is rising, the price of fuel, food, but you are not growing. What's wrong with you? That has been my biggest challenge in terms of the budget of the authority has been shrinking. The expectations of society, the public is more pronounced now, are growing. To a point, Honorable Fandam, where midway during a financial year, we sometimes have to even switch priorities, which run the risk of affecting our annual performance, to respond to the clarion calls, you know, by South Africans. Say, this is wrong, you need to intervene in this regard. So it has been the issue of shrinking budgets and a growing mandate, which then affects our human capital. We are not able to recruit. We need to continue. Every time a vacancy arises, we don't just advertise. We have to apply ourselves and so forth. So from a governance point of view, it's really, really, really tough. I think from a regulatory perspective, the biggest challenge has been around issues of litigation, as I've said. You know, just trying to normalize the way of doing things around regulations, and also trying to instill a new culture. You know, when people have been in an environment for too long, especially at the, you know, junior managerial level and so forth, people who are appointed permanently and you'll be there for as long as you want to be there, or it's possible, it's very difficult to instill a new way, a new culture of doing things. I think that also, because that's how regulatory committees and projects, everything that we talk about in the open, that's how they actually originate. They start in council-led committees. And lastly, of course, to instill this sense of executive board director in my colleagues, respectfully so. Because as I said, it's a blind spot. And if you only look at the regulatory aspect of things and don't see yourself as a board member, trouble looms. Thank you.
Thank you. If you could look into the future, I mean, obviously we'd be appointing councillors for the next term. If you could give us a forecast of where you see, very briefly, where you see the sector going and what are some of the changes that are going to happen and how ICASA is going to deal with those changes. Don't talk to me about what's happening now. What's happening in 5 years, in 10 years, and how ICASA prepares for that, so that you aren't constantly on the back foot and you're on the front foot and you know this is coming, this is how we're going to deal with this, so that, you know, regulations don't take a very long time while South Africa's left behind and technological developments are moving ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Fandam. Thanks for the question. Where is the sector going? Okay, let me be free. The truth is, where the sector is going, Honorable Chairperson, is a scenario in the near future where the future broadcaster is a telco. The way we know broadcasting today, in the near future, actually it's now gradually upon us. MTN, Vodacom, and so forth will be the biggest, in the near future, will be the biggest broadcasters ever. The biggest company that might emerge in South Africa, you said you want the future, I won't be prophetic. The future company, the future biggest commercially viable company in the near future will be possibly a merger between one of the big telcos and MultiChoice. That's the future that is coming. And Honorable Faku, that's where the question of the mischief comes in. Because in readying ourselves for that reality that is coming, we would need to have a properly positioned regulator. Whether ICASA in its current form is that, I think it depends on the modalities of how that future, Honorable Van Damme, will evolve. But to be quite honest, that future is almost upon us. Over-the-top services are all over the show. A WhatsApp message has the same characteristics, nature and form as what used to be an SMS. A WhatsApp voice call, same characteristics of what used to be a normal call. Yet, they operate on two completely diverse platforms. One is regulated, the other is not, which is the internet. So I hope I'm responding to you, Honorable Fana. That's the future that we see. And what we are going to engage to, what I, rather, am going to make sure that happens is what I've also started. It's risky. ICASA, historically, comes from a history or background of, let me say, advanced age counselors. Let me put it that way. And with that, there has been some sense of vibrancy that has been required. And the vibrancy is seen in the missing voice of ICASA in public discourse. Now, what I am going to do, what I have already started in my calendar is full. I'm compelled to say things in panels and platforms, which is very tricky. But I think, owing to my energy that I hope I have, I'm going to make sure that ICASA becomes active, borrowing from the model of the regulator in the US, the FCC, becomes active in public discourse so that I can answer the tough questions, I can debate within the realm, of course, of not compromising ICASA processes. So that's what I'm doing, public discourse, healthy debate, lock horns, and face students and go for it. I think that's one thing that I have already started and I'm going to keep on doing. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Van Damme has been answered. Dr. Ndlozi. Dr. Ndlozi, yes, Dr.
No, that's fine. I want to take a step back. I think that the way you guys have taken a decision around the allocation of high spectrum demand is going to reproduce the current power dynamics. So there's no difference. There won't be new players, because at the core is the idea of auction, meaning the highest bidder. So there's no industry in South Africa where there are black highest bidders. There's no black person that can bid, who has enough money to contest either MTN or Vodacom. And so in my view, you are part of the problem. What's your reaction to that?
Thank you, Dr. Ndlozi. So, the spectrum approach is twofold. One is the auction. So, let's take a step back. Universally, there are various ways and methods of allocating spectrum. So I think your question is very helpful because to then give an opportunity to clarify internationally. And those methods, it's a beauty contest, which will most likely land me at the Zondo Commission, or the other method is through an auction. And so the auction is developed and seen as the best method of assignment globally. So in terms of best practice, however, there are contextual considerations. Let's go back a little bit. MTN, Vodacom, I'll use them as examples. They have spectrum, but it was not obtained through an auction because the contextual considerations in our country, Chairperson, of 1994 were different to where we are today. Now, how we are going to license spectrum going forward, as contained in our information memorandum, we are going to have auction, which will be for more established players with a reserve price, and they will be because they have already they are already advanced. For new entrants, there will be a section of the wireless or wholesale open access network. So we just tried, in the interest of time, to decouple the two. It's still one process. In the calendar year 2020, we are going.
I know what's happening.
Yes. So what?
Wait. I don't understand. Okay. I know what's happening. It looks like you're trying to re-explain your memorandum. I'm saying to you, there won't be new entrants, and there will never be a contestant. You go ask people in the banking sector, you go ask people in the broadcasting sector, they will fail because new entrants will require a massive capital to build infrastructure. So really, you people are playing games. I'm saying, what's your reaction? In what way do you think a new entrant is going to contest with the price offers of Telkom, even if they've got a licensed spectrum? It won't happen. You're going to reproduce the current duopoly. At best, there will be like maybe Telkom might have some advantage, but there won't be fundamentally new players. And the story of evidence, or the evidence itself, which is in perpetual struggle, it never really did take off. So I'm saying to you, that's already your legacy if we do not appoint you back. What is your reaction to that?
Okay, thanks, Dr. Lewis. There will be new entrants. One of the measures we are introducing, one is a new entrant through the wholesale open access network. That's why I said it's still spectrum licensing. But for all practical reasons, we've decoupled the two. Still one process. To say there will be a wholesale open access network which may have a 30% compulsory capacity clause, meaning established, so it's a new entrant. It will be made up of consortiums of, you know, companies made of young women, you know, women, young people, black people, and so forth.
Amen.
And for us to license.
Oh. Wait. All you are doing is licensing. You are not giving people anything else. So to start a network, I need money, capital. And I'm saying to you that there's no such a thing. Which bank is going to give women money? Where? And where is the evidence of that on any industry? South Africa's... So the contextual conditions that you are saying existed in 1994 still exist to this day. What was in 1994 a monopoly called Telkom? And then they went to they just went to give. That's why they didn't auction. So that's what you should have done here. 5G is going to force everybody to share infrastructure in the end. But still, the horses have bolted. Disruption of the market through licensing. Where? How?
Okay, Dr. Ndlozi, the wholesale open access network has those characteristics of GIF, the GIF you are referring to. It's exactly that. It's just that all I'm saying is that it's a dual approach.
Okay, we're not agreeing on this one. I think... So, let's pick up on I agree. I've seen a lot of studies to this effect. What would be the regulatory framework in total online broadcasting? What would be the regulatory framework? I mean, you've just made a case for the closure of an entire broadcasting regulation as it stands. When you say, you know, if MultiChoice merges with Vodacom and all Vodacom subscribers can watch their online offers. So if for me to watch Showmax, I must necessarily have, you know, Vodacom. And if I don't, I want to access it through MTN, they charge me a little bit. But what are the regulatory frameworks under those conditions from a broadcasting point of view?
I look at it more as the... So once we venture into that space, Dr. Andrews, we have to call it perhaps regulation of the internet, because it is from everything then falls from there. And the jury is out globally. There are studies made in all forms and manners on how can the internet be regulated, or should it be regulated? Because, you know...
No, your view.
Yes,
I don't have time.
Yes.
So how do we regulate internet? Do you want me to put it that way?
Yeah.
Yes. Should we or should we not? If we do, how?
Well, how
people watch Mubango online, ne? The Derby, everything. I know that. How do we regulate? If you believe we should regulate, or there's no regulation. If there's no regulation, I'll move to the next question.
Thanks. There should be regulation around issues of, you know, children rights, you know, age restrictions.
How?
Yes. In the current manner which the FPB, the Film and Publication Board, does things, we need to find a way of aligning those to the medium, because it's a question of medium.
So, yeah, that's okay. When they do not comply,
yes.
At the moment we take their licenses.
Yes.
That's the crux.
When
it's online, it's internet. When they don't comply, what do we do?
Legislation needs to then talk to that.
What? What do we do?
Yes. Remember, you can only enforce a regulation or legislation that exists.
And what would such a legislation do? You are leading Nicasa to the future. You must tell us. If that is the case, what will be your power? What will we have to do to enforce democratic principles, taking into consideration that you are also a Chapter 9 species?
We would have to, one, introduce as Parliament certain aspects of legislation which would enable regulation making.
Okay, you're not answering my question. Let me go to the other aspect. So clearly there are two things you haven't thought of about the future. I think it's dangerous. Now, talking the past, two things. You get into ICASA,
yeah.
And historically, ICASA has been extremely complicit in the domination of MultiChoice through various ICASA regulations, including something as simple as you guys saying SABC must first ask your permission before it launches digital platforms. But those conditions are not imposed for private pay television or private broadcasters, let's put it that way. You've been there for how long? 4 years. Yeah, those rules are still there 4 years later. Those regulations are still there 4 years later. You may blame those old people, but aren't you old like them with your slow pace? If you believe those regulations should have been changed from what you said earlier on. They are still there. Market regulations, sports regulations, those are things through which MultiChoice took a serious advantage in terms of its domination, consolidation of its monopoly, and in some instances in ways that even crippled the SABC's finances. They are still there. You've been there.
Yeah.
So people who came before you, who were there before, but no, they are under review. For as long as I've been in this parliament, those regulations have been under review. What's your reaction to that?
Thanks. No, I don't think we've been on a slow pace, respectfully, Honorable Ndlozi. Since I joined the ICASA in 2016, we initiated the process. I can only account for things that happened when I was there. We initiated the process into the subscription broadcasting market. I think slide number 6 says we are 80% done. We can try and expedite things. This is an extremely highly litigious space. You can try and expedite things and do, to start with, before you even have just a consultative document, the Act stipulates your 45 working days, you have to publish it, you have to allow for oral representation, someone asks for an extension, and it's not only about multi-choice, it's about them and other content providers. So, I'm trying to illustrate
three, four years.
Yes.
Be fair with me.
Absolutely, and it's beyond our control on that particular honorable Ndlozi.
Give me an example.
Yes.
I mean, the mask care regulations were not consistent with laws.
Yeah.
So their review is actually just making them consistent with existing laws. Can't take you 3 years. Come on.
Honorable Ndlozi, the mask care regulations were dealt with in 2015, 2016, with an effective date around sometime in 2017, because there's an effective date as to when they will be in effect. As I've said, there is a cycle period. We need to first wait with the mask carry, with the call termination. You cannot set the ground rules that regulations will be in effect for 3 years and then airborne. You want to, because you feel that you would like to engage and make a meaningful change. To some extent, you might, but not holistically. As I've said, as I've mentioned mask carry proactively in my presentation, to say we are now almost at the tail end of the existing regulations. That is why we are conducting a regulation.
Final one.
Yeah.
This is the final one, Chairperson. You see, multi-choice is an extremely racist business.
Oh.
Yeah. So, like many businesses in South Africa, so I don't think you'll disagree that producers who own black production companies get far much less than white owned production companies. So if I'm selling content, like if I'm Courtney Ferguson, and I'm selling content like The Queen, I get less money because it's playing on the Mzansi Magic. And a person who's selling content on, say, Mnet. And they use some regime of LSM. And this, I think, is where the racism is. Because there is nothing the black middle class, there is nothing, there's no product you can tell me now that the black middle class cannot buy which the white middle class buys. In fact, if you check all the adverts on Mnet, whether it's a Porsche, whether it's champagne, whether it's jewelry, black people consume those things more, particularly expensive alcohol. But the productions of audiences that are dominated by black people are rated low. So it's not scientific. It has nothing to do with LSM. It's just the assumption that because it's white, it's more expensive. Because it's blacks, it's less. If you agree with this analysis, which I have no doubt anyone, no one can dispute, if you agree with this analysis, shouldn't there have been some form of an obligation on ICASA from a regulation point of view, from a transformation point of view, to protect black producers? And make sure that broadcasters, not just multi-choice, compensate equally for the productions. What is your reaction to that?
Last does not have interjections. It's just a response.
Yeah. Thank you.
No, I'm thanking you in advance. You see the pressure I get. Thank you very much. You know, I ask much more interesting questions here, but it's okay. they still oppress me.
Yeah. Honorable Luke, I think only your last question.
It's a uniform mandatory process, but you can continue.
The closing point of your question illustrates that indeed it's common cause that currently we are not empowered to venture into the terrain. I think that we have to accept. Because what you are referring to is what is outside, it falls outside of the mandate and scope of ICASA. Those are commercial agreements entered into between our licensee and their clients and suppliers and whoever. So those are commercial, we do not, as we speak, there is nothing that I can take the ICASA Act and Broadcasting Act and all manner of acts and be empowered to legally address. So that's the point of departure. But if you want to know my personal view of whether I view that as a regulatory gap, of course, I think the issues of transformation are but a fulcrum of where we are and where we are going as a people. So legislation is informed by realities of a moment in time. And I think the moment has arrived. There's been an ECA amendment bill, you know, amended as time unfolds. And I think if we want to look into the issue of commercial arrangements between our licensees and their suppliers and clients and so forth, it is something that, of course, legislatively we need to look at. Example, there was a channel taken off air. Now, I'm just trying to illustrate. ANN7, it was taken off air by MultiChoice. From a regulatory point of view, all we can do is channel authorization at the time that MultiChoice submits to us to bring a channel on air, and they will notify us when they take a channel off air. But it's a legislative gap. The arrangements, the amount of monies they agree to and everything else, it's completely outside of whether they give ANN7 2 rand a day and they give ENCA 5 million. Unfortunately, we cannot be ultra-virus. We can't use regulatory powers that we don't have. We don't. Then I'll be labeled with all manner of things in the news. Simply because we derive our regulatory mandate from legislation, the constitution, and our regulation. So for as long as it's an uncharted territory, we cannot over-apply ourselves, regardless of how we feel personally. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mulala. No, you can't. Honorable Mulala. I know there may be competition about doctor, but let's agree that's the case. No, must also switch off.
Envy is ignorance. Honorable Ndlozi.
Yeah, are you off, Honorable?
Yeah, I'm off.
Thanks. And Chair, I'm going to query because Honorable Ndlozi is taking almost 20 minutes on the question. And we're given very little time. We agreed on 5 o'clock to have another candidate. It's almost 10 past 10, it's 7. So maybe. Yeah. So.
But Chairperson, protect me. Protect me.
Yes. Yeah. So.
I apologize for that, but thanks, Doctor. For
yeah, maybe you must be EFF inside. I'm suspecting. Thank you.
Wow.
No, I'm on a lighter note.
Investigated after the message. That's very serious casting of podcast.
Yeah.
Really?
No, I withdraw chance. Why?
How is being EFF an aspersion?
Yeah. Now it's fine. It's been withdrawn chance. Mr. Mudimueng, I had a lot of questions. Unfortunately, my time is not on my side. I will only ask you 2 or 3 questions. The first one is around the monetary system in ICASA. You are enforcing legislation, but in your presentation you indicated the governance issues which might have been an impact. But I'm worried about how you monitor legislation, not worried more about the enforcement, but how do you monitor that? What you are supposed to impose or enforce, at least there's a monetary system. Can't you create
such a thing. The reason I'm raising that is because in an area where I'm living, there's a big challenge around roaming in your own country. We're living next to Botswana border. Everybody who's using MTN, Vodacom in that area, after 5 minutes, you are on Botswana network. After 10 minutes, you are on South African network. And the other network cost more than ours. In that case, and most of our people are villagers, they are poor, and this thing affects them quite severely. So I needed an intervention in that regard from your response for what should be done as quickly as how long. The other issues on spectrum, I wanted to ask you a lot of questions around it. But I'm told, I'm not an expert, I'm told that there are bands that are currently available that can be auctioned as in next month, yes, or next week. How ready are you in terms of spectrum? Just a summary of what will happen when and so on, because that's also another burning issue. And in your presentation, you said you want to be frank with us, but I did not hear you speaking a lot about the challenges that you face around your Section 192 of the Constitution versus the interference on the ministry or whoever. I've not heard you said anything about that. I want to hear that because one of the presenters here presented that your budget was halted at some point and so on. And would you regard that as interference in terms of your understanding of Section 192 of the Constitution? But I also want you to put up some key challenges. Remember, even if we decide not to appoint you, you still have an obligation to do and hand over in this interview to say to us, this is what I'm living in ICASA. These are the key areas that are complex that we could not resolve. Yes, the achievement you have presented them, but we need those areas that you think are more complex. Because in terms of the law, you are counting to us. Now you must be open with us. Thanks, Chair. I hope I've done my part.
Answers to get. And those answers must come. Dr. Gill,
thank you, thank you. Okay, let me start with the issue of spillage. So spillage will be the situation you've explained where along the borders, you would have a network of another country moving to the other. It's not only in terms of telcos, but even in the broadcasting space, it happens. It's an ongoing issue. What I know that I've been encouraging, and it's a bit growing, beyond CRASA, which is an association of regulators within the region. But I also encourage regulator-to-regulator engagement. So BOCRA, which is the ICASA equivalent in Botswana, I always really encourage, and there's been a number of meetings with the team. Whenever they come to present to us quality of service monitoring reports, complaints from consumers into that effect, to say, but when last did you have a meeting with BOCRA? Because I think those are issues that can be best handled through engagement between the two parties, because we have got CRASA, as I said, the regional body of regulators, which we are a signatory to, and issues are ventilated there. Indeed, it's a realistic issue. It happens, and it's a very technical issue. I'll explain. So you find that there is an area, Honorable Mulan, there is an area which is on the borderline. Right. So if MTN in the South African side say we want to, on a radius of 50 kilometers, put our antenna so that it does not cross the border, the reality is that there is a part of South Africa which is much closer, of course, to the border, that this 50 kilometer radius might spill on to the other side. So it's not like we are dealing with round shapes. I'm not an engineer, but I'm just trying to explain. Because of how the map is, you would find that within the radius, there is an area which falls in or outside. And then it would still extend by the same, 20 kilometers onto Botswana or 20 kilometers onto South Africa and vice versa. So it requires sophisticated technologies, but most importantly, engagement. Before I step off on this one, I know there's an instance where we thought we had achieved resolving that on a broadcasting question, only to find that we have now deprived South Africans. I think it was with LSAD FM frequency. Now, we thought we had resolved it, only to find that we've created a problem in other areas still within South Africa. Now, you raised the issue of more like a monitoring system. Monitoring, is that correct? Yes. Monitoring and enforcement happens, and it comes at a cost. You might have seen recently there was an uproar by community broadcasters saying that ICASA has closed down community radio stations. What they are not telling, I'm just illustrating by way of an example to save time, while they are not communicating, they are not saying ICASA has closed us because we were non-compliant. We were given a license on the basis that we will submit annual financial statements, we will hold annual general meetings, we will... Some of them don't comply. When we enforce, it becomes a problem, it touches on constituencies, it just becomes a big hot potato, which we then have to resolve still, because we don't regulate for market failure. So we do enforce, but it comes at a cost. I mean, we do enforce. We fined a telco millions recently. The matter is still in court. It's a contested terrain. We might win or lose in court, but we believe that we have done the best from a monetary and compliance point of view. The last one, on you touched on spectrum. The auction part of spectrum will happen in 2020. I think we are on track to achieve that. The wholesale open access network, which Honorable Ndlozi is very passionate about, new entrants, consortiums, and so forth, will happen in 2021. I think we just needed to decouple the two in the interest of time. Interference. I think I've tried to answer this, but I will say once again, I don't see it more as interference, but a contested terrain. It is a contested terrain. You are on one side, you are the policymaker, government, the minister. You articulate, you develop and articulate your policies in a particular manner. There comes ICASA, the regulator, which has to independently apply itself and make decisions. And ICASA sometimes says, yebo, or no, I won't do this, based on section what and section what of the act. And then we all blow our fuses, and then there seems to be a contestation. But for me, I think it's a contested terrain which has, if we are responsible leaders, it has to be properly managed through healthy, legal stakeholder relations. And you asked me to be frank and say, let's say this is a handover interview, and I'm joining the ranks of the unemployed youth in 4 weeks. What would be my parting shot? I would say to you, Honorable Mulale, the only thing I would request from this portfolio committee is to be mindful of how it appoints ICASA councillors. I'm not casting a cloud on anyone, but that's what history has taught me. If we are not careful and thorough, which I believe the committee is, you've been here for a week, in how we appoint councillors, therein lies a future challenge. Capacity is first and foremost an important aspect of this process, because at ICASA, the final decisions at ICASA are those of council, and we rely on your good selves. Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable.
Honorable Mulala, do you want to make a follow-up?
All of you.
Is that waiting today?
No, but you guys, if you say 5 minutes, you say 5 minutes.
Okay, no. Let me reserve my comment.
No, I to my
so you're coming. Honorable Mulala, you're covered.
No.
I'm sure that's
Dr. Gabis, I just wanted to check one thing.
Okay.
I think for me you've covered the follow-up questions I wanted. On the one.
Yes.
If there's a separation in terms of time and what you do,
yes.
Are we not going to have a similar problem of the past? That by the time you actually give them space, there's really no space. I'm just saying from a point of consumers having interest in getting involved in one. Yeah.
Thank you. There will be spectrum allocated for the world. So across all the bands, I would say that we are licensing, you know, a pocket of 700, 800, you know, so-called 5G and so forth, there will be reservations for the world because the objective of the auction is different. I think we listened to the Minister of Finance. Actually, the auction money is already committed. But to answer your question more directly, indeed, there will be lucrative spectrum reserved for the world. Yes.
So that you don't have people who carry licenses like you are having in broadcasting, but they can't participate after all, right? So I just wanted to check if I heard you well. Honorable Kubek?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure or I'll be offending, but it's not an offense. Kana, Doctor, how old are you at the moment?
I was born on the 28th of August, 1986. I'm 34 years old in August this year. I'm turning 34 years old. Yes.
Okay. You said you started at the age of 23 in this industry.
In boards, appointed by ministers and so forth, in boards. I was 23 years old, yes.
So,
I guarantee nothing offensive.
Okay, Jay. So it means you are still owing a youth full-time, so. Especially in this industry. But dear doctor, I would like to ask a question based on the issue of saying, you are saying you were here for 4 years, being a member, and 1 year as an acting chair. Unfortunately, you come when there is a big challenge that you need to address it, especially this one of a spectrum. But yeah, let me say to you, based on your presentation that you have presented it here, on your experience in ICASA, what is the biggest threat facing this organization? So,
the biggest threat, thanks for the question, the biggest threat is ICASA being unable to fulfill its mandate because of limited resources. It's a big threat. Number two is also what I've touched on, the caliber and capacity at the council level ought to be strengthened. And I think in terms of capacity, for the ability of ICASA to have resources to do its work without fear of even to defend its regulatory decisions, we need resources. And I think if the past 3 years are anything to go by, this shrinking, we are headed for somewhat of a disaster. That's why I said I would take it upon myself to ensure that engagements continue around the funding model. Thank you.
So actually, it means it's a challenge on the issue of the budget for ICAS, right? What are you going to do differently now? If we are saying tomorrow we are appointing you, particularly around this high data cost and ensuring transformation in the sector.
Thank you, Honorable. I think, you know, I happened to sign the MOU between ICASA and the Competition Commission in August, September. And I think one of the biggest achievements one would do in the intervening period is to find alignment between what we are doing as ICASA and what the Competition Commission is doing on the question of data. It's something that I really hold dearly and I'm working on. But secondly, is to ensure that ICASA's own process on the data market inquiry is completed and there is favorable data costing. I want to use this word, Honorable Chair, because we don't want data prices to just fall with the quality of service. We must make sure that we don't regulate for market failure, costs become favorable, get lowered in a way that does not collapse industry. And that would require a lot of extensive involvement, and that's something that I would really commit myself to. Thanks.
Well, last one, Chair. On the issue of the spectrum, it is a bit confusing. On the news, we see that certain comprises already, I mean, certain companies already have 5G on it. So the spectrum and the selling packages online, I think one company is called Rain. How possible is that when the president spoke in the sauna last week, the ICASA is still working on the process to license this 5G spectrum?
All right, thank you. All right, Honorable Kube, let me try and answer you in the form of an analogy or example. You see, spectrum is like cake flour, Chairperson. With cake flour, you can produce dumpling, you can produce magwenya, you can produce a chocolate cake with the same thing. Spectrum is technology neutral. So the company you've mentioned and other companies, they already had certain spectrum bands which today are seen to be suitable for 5G. But they were given those spectrum lots under a different understanding. At that time, we did not even know what 5G will be. I'll make an example. Today, there is 800, which maybe MTN has. They are using it for 3G. In future, you might find that something called 7G thrives on that band. And someone then will ask, why does MTN already have 7G spectrum? Simply because ke flower. Adults will use that cake flour to bake cake and so forth. It's technology neutral, and the ITU, Chairperson, is exactly pushing all regulators all over the world to move on this technology neutral basis. So Rain has that spectrum, lucky them, but we are now trying to level the playing fields. I hope I have answered. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
All right, no, Honorable Ndlozi, the question is not what we look at. I think we have given Honorable Members ample time to ask, and I'm sure it may look unfair, so that when you're an incumbent trying to get back, the questions have to be harder, so that we also understand what are you bringing in to continue. So, in that score, I will give you a minute to just make your closing point to members, and then we can be able to release you.
No, I thank you for the opportunity. I'm humbled to be here. It was never a foregone that I would even have an opportunity to be here. There's been a number of applicants, some made it thus far, and as an incumbent, I really appreciate, because, as you rightfully say, the odds can be somewhat staggered against. But because I'm here, I was able to share my experience over the years and my vision and wish list into the future.
I cannot do anything other than to thank for to be thankful for this opportunity. Thank you. Yes.
I know that it's about at least making and all of them that side to smile. Yes, so all right. So they are looking at the generational issues here. All right, but thanks, Dr. Kiabetsu. We can get the other one. All administrative matters, we'll sort them out with the support staff. Sure.